Okay. Good afternoon. I'm Don Conrad, and I'm going to be presenting a talk today on VHDL and model libraries. And what I'd like to do first is look at a little bit of a history and the most predominant simulation library at DEC, look at its pluses and its minuses, and then look at the VHDL-based library. The SimLab library, which is supported out of my group here at DEC, basically supports a DECSIM simulation environment, approximately 1,400 models, has a 5-year development distribution and support history, and through this library we've gained significant leverage of resources and cost minimization for the company, as well as consistent model usage across DEC. And what this basically implies is that once a design is done in the design community, passing it on to manufacturing or support, the same set of models and responses will be available. Also, we provide dedicated fast response so that models can be turned around. Typically, a memory model may only take 24 hours to get back to a customer. The other plus side is a DEC purchase specification compliance. And that basically says that typically purchasing people are after the best deals they can get, and they're not, shall we say, above cutting a deal out of the back of a truck in South Boston for 4,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 components that may or may not meet the manufacturer's data specification. So it's very important for any corporation that you meet their purchase spec values. There are, however, some minuses with our current sim library. And actually, one of the positive, which happened to be that it supports a DECSIM environment, is also one of the negatives. It says it's a DECSIM-only focus. And as DECSIM moves off over the next 18 months as being less than the primary simulator within DEC, then the SimLab will become less valuable. Also, one of the problems that we have in model development is a long cycle for industry standard LSI and VLSI parts, which can typically take on the order of anywhere from 4 to 6 months. And the fact the group only has 5 people in it, supporting 28 sites, makes it very difficult to dedicate that much resource for that long a period of time. And the other point is that we cannot leverage the vendor model libraries. And suffice it to say that there is probably models on the order of maybe 6,000 to 8,000 models available out there in the industry today that we really can't take advantage of. Well, let's look at a VHDL-based library. In particular, we have a number of opportunities. One of those being the multi-simulator support increases the user-based leverage. And what that basically says is that models can be reused on a larger base of users, which on a per-user cost, which would minimize the user cost. So if I had 10 users of a model or a model library versus 100, I could certainly reduce the cost if we were at 100. And this would allow me to support all of the simulators that support VHDL, increasing the user size. The other advantage is the availability of off-the-shelf LSI and VLSI parts that says all it takes me is the time for me to get the vendor to ship me the model. And model vendors can be highly leveraged. What I can basically buy in bulk. In other words, I can go and buy 10 of this model and get a cost reduction rather than buying one license to it. However, we don't get this for free, and there are a number of problems. And one of those being the DEC purchase specification compliance, of which most of the external models come off of the data sheets or the standard part that a manufacturer sells. And the only differences may be it may be commercial grade or it may be military grade. That doesn't deal with the fact, as I mentioned before, that our purchase agents were able to make a deal in South Boston off the back of a truck with a certain particular item that didn't meet the spec but drove the cost way down. The other is a dedicated response. When you basically are going to call up a company in California, it turns out you're here at 11 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock their time. You may get nobody on the other end of the line. You may get nobody able to respond to you in a very quick fashion. We run a response system that operates basically 24 hours a day and around the world. And so we're more tuned to response. But once again, this would have to be worked. Also, there's existing library translation. We have 1,400 models today, and how we translate those in an efficient manner is a key question. Another point is training while keeping productivity. In transitioning to VHDL, you have to have some way, in today's environment of cost and headcount restrictions, we have to have a way of training people, but still keeping the productivity. There's also a set of special models that aren't going to be available in the vendor space that we've done for particular products, special transactor models. Also, we face a problem of cost minimization. DEC wants minimum cost and the vendor wants maximum cost. So that would have to be worked out. And also there's an issue with internal modeling of the VLSI chips out of Hudson. Of course, the problems aren't all bad. We have to look to bridge this gap. And what I'm basically doing on this slide is taking those problem items and breaking them down into different categories. In particular, dedicated response, cost minimization, and DEC specification compliance are really in driving the model vendor relationship. And most of these can be satisfied by doing that in an aggressive manner. Existing library translation. The basic tactic here is to look at the current usage assessment of those models that are currently being used the most and translate them plus on-demand development. Even though we have 1,400 models, I would believe that not more than 200 or 300 of them are being actively used at any one time. As far as the internal VLSI modeling from Hudson, and I'm only going to address the new models. They're basically being done in C, and most simulators today will allow through a foreign language interface C models to be connected. The only problem with this is you won't be able to view inside those C models as you would inside the VHDL models that the simulator has the source code for. In the area of training while keeping productivity, the three items that we have to look at are development environment transition from the DECSIM environment today to a VHDL environment tomorrow. One of the things we really like to do is we have tremendous experience, probably 25 man years or more, in doing modeling. And therefore, we'd like to leverage that modeling experience. And in particular, one way of doing this is to use high-level tools for VHDL model development that would maximize the modeling experience without getting them caught in the details of VHDL. And basically, I'd like to finish the talk today by talking about four of the tool areas that we've looked at in the area of high-level VHDL tools. The four of them are Express VHDL from iLogix, which is a graphics-based tool, the Hum design system, and I can't tell you what Hum means. I was thinking about that on the way in today, and I never bothered to ask them, so I really have no idea. The Hum design system, which is basically a spreadsheet system, the standard developer's kit that I would classify if people understand C++ or object-oriented languages. It is basically a class library that enhances productivity and software reusability. And the last one is a VHDL design assistant, which is really a way of managing your design environment that does not include a simulator. It has source code managers and a number of graphical tools for creating different types of models. So the first one I'll talk about is Express VHDL. And you'll hear more about Express VHDL from Norbert Ng when he gives his talk a little later this afternoon. Express VHDL is basically a graphical front end for behavioral model development using two items, one of them called state charts and the other one called activity charts. I have further information on Express VHDL and iLogix, and I don't intend to go into any depth as to what these actually are. There's a model execution tool that graphically animates models. And we've seen a number of demos of this, and it's really pretty slick. One of the demos involves a cockpit instrumentation for one of the advanced jet fighters. And they actually modeled the entire instrumentation system, and they have a graphic animation tool, which is the one I'm talking about here, and it actually animated the entire cockpit. So you could see the instruments and so forth. State charts, which I talked about earlier, extend state transition diagrams with hierarchy, concurrency, and broadcasting. and activity charts describe the data flow within the system when functions are to be used. Once you have created the model, you've checked it through animation, state chart and activity chart simulator, you can then directly generate VHDL from the graphical model that is syntactically and semantically correct. This also is a companion to another product called StateMate that has been used to design several systems that the DoD has procured. And that leads into another element is there is an integrated documentation system. Since doing anything for the DoD requires extensive documentation, this is put in place to basically automate that step. And they adhere to a certain documentation standard and basically can generate the documentation off the information that you've supplied in creating the model. It's not fully automatic, but it's about 95%. The only potential disadvantage with this system is the fact we're talking about learning yet a new modeling technique, a new modeling language, a graphics-based system. And I do have a concern that we could spend more time learning that system than we would have spent learning VHDL. But there is also another advantage to this type of generating VHDL directly that says, as the CLSI representative said earlier today in the keynote speech, that VHDL standard will change in 1992, and every 5 years it'll be revalidated and probably a significant release in 1997. That basically says if I've gone off and procured or designed or acquired, developed, maybe 15,000 or 10,000 VHDL models, if I could source them through Express VHDL, then simply retargeting the output to the new VHDL standard, I could translate basically the majority of my models that were developed in this manner so that I wouldn't have to deal with going back and addressing all of those individual models. The next system I'd like to talk about, the one that I don't know what the name means, the HUM design system. Basically, this is an interesting and new concept for designing and modeling components to systems. And they use the analogy, the Lewis Associates, where this comes from, of schematic capture is to structural design as HUM is to behavioral design. As I said, it's a spreadsheet-like input format, and also gives you an abstract waveform view for visual feedback that looks very much like the data book representation. It supports hierarchy and concurrency and fast learning curve. And the reason I say fast learning curve is me as a manager sat down in front of the PC with this system, and after reading the manual that was about a little over a quarter of an inch thick, in about 20 minutes, I actually could do modeling with this system. I couldn't do that with a pure VHDL because I'd have to read and go to class for that. Express VHDL, I couldn't do that because I didn't have the system and would have to also learn how to do it. So basically, this is the one I like the best because I could actually use it. And the other comment is a very compact representation as far as disk space is concerned before generating the VHDL. I'd just like to take a minute to show you what a HUM table or spreadsheet looks like. Basically, also I'd like to mention that this is a memory read cycle from an 8085, an Intel 8085 processor model. The furthest left-hand column is the operation or operator column. The next column is the object column upon which the operation is to take place. And then you have this rather broad line, and the following columns basically are actions that occur when conditions are satisfied. So if we look at the first one, it says when, which is a rather simple concept, when the object T state, and then the next columns give its values, 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3. Whenever it's a 1, for instance, and clock falls, then the address register is put onto the output pins AD0 through AD15. S0 is set low, S1 is set high, IOM is set low, and AL is set high. Now also, the second column will be evaluated when T state is 1 and the clock rises. So these are actually mutually exclusive between clock rising and falling. And if we assume the clock rises at T state 1, then A was set low and the T state is incremented so that the next time that this is called will be into the two states. So that's all I really wanted to show you there. I talked about an abstract waveform generator, and basically this is the output of the abstract waveform generator that refers to exactly the same items that you happen to see on the other chart. And so you have T state that has values, you have the clock that rises and falls, you have the address bus outputting to the output pins during this particular time, and so forth. And if you look through this, this is very similar to what you see in a data book, but it is abstract. It has no delays to it. Okay, I'd like to show you a little bit more complicated sheet and make another point. This basically is a part of an 8085 model, and it only implements the read and write memory cycles. And basically what I can show you here is that if you remember, our previous spreadsheet was called MR underscore read. So what basically happens here, if we look at this particular column, it basically says when instruction cycle is true and the memory cycle is 2, if the opcode is STA, then I do a memory read. If it's IDA, then I do a memory read, and then nothing else. And you can see memory write. You can also see opfetch. These refer to hierarchical spreadsheets. And just to show you that it really works, which I don't have slides of, and I also made it almost too small for you to read, are the three pages that show you the VHDL output from the 8085 model. Okay. I'd just like to put this other chart up that's also included that basically shows you the hum structure, and make note that the hum time module, which is another module for adding design timing, although you can do that in the hum table to begin with, is not there yet, and part of the reason for it is the difficulty in doing timing within VHDL. Out here there's an output to other HDLs, and this particular system outputs to LASAR models today. And in fact, this module is available for LASAR. However, because as I said before, the difference in timing algorithms, VHDL does not support that module, so they're rewriting it. Also, there's a much better way to do instruction decodes. It's more compact than using hum tables specifically. So this is another module that has just been released. Everything and HumStim is also will be released by the end of the year. The rest of the system is there. In our evaluation, there are a number of things that could be improved in the input part of it, but that has to do basically with data input. For instance, if we have a 256-pin device, you have to put in each input and output pin by hand, even though it may be like that address bus, 80.0 through 80.15. So there are some things that they need to improve, and it is a relatively young product. The next thing I'd like to talk about is the standard developer's kit, which is from VHDL Consulting. And basically, if you're familiar with C++ or object-oriented language, this, as I said before, acts like a class library. And it's basically a set of 5 VHDL subroutine packages plus a modeler's guide. And I think it's important to remember that one of the things that we'd all like to do is to make sure that we do the model development in a consistent manner. If not with the outside vendors, at least internal. It makes it very easy to read, and everybody follows the same way of doing things. The other 5 modules, the 3 in particular I'd like to point out, are the standard timing set of subroutines that really give you a complete timing standard for all VHDL models, from a single value timing to slope intercept to third degree derating algorithms. The other one is a RegPack that provides register level transfer modeling, and the third one is the MemPack that allows easy building of DRAMs, RAMs, and ROMs, which are done all the time within computer designs. And the other point to make is there's extensive training programs available. What the hope here is that by providing these kind of subroutines, you get up the productivity curve very fast. And everybody, by using the same routines, basically ends up doing the modeling in the same manner. The last one I'm going to talk about is a VHDL design assistant, which we haven't seen, but I've looked at some literature of, and I wanted to include it because it's another type of high-level tool that provides productivity. Basically, it's a design environment to create and manage VHDL source code. Does not provide you with a simulator, but a source manager, a source editor, and a source browser. Additional modules include a state machine editor, and this is graphical, very similar to GState from Reading, if those that are familiar with it. A PetriNet editor, which is a different kind of simulation technique. A VHDL architecture editor, which is also graphic. And one of the interesting ones is the VHDL transformation system. I was a little surprised to see this, and it basically takes rules and allow you to transform VHDL source. And I had sort of a hard time. I said, why do I want to do that? And it basically comes down to the fact, as discussed earlier, that the different synthesis systems take a different subset of VHDL. So when I go to Synopsys or I go to Autologic from Mentor, I actually have to make changes in my VHDL to conform to what input is required by Synopsys and, say, Mentor. And so what they give you is this transformation system that is rule-based that I can basically tell it what to transform and how to transform it. So after I read it a little further, I sort of understood what this is. And I do look at it and I say, oh, that's wonderful. I thought VHDL was a standard. Okay, the last few charts basically show you where the high-level tools that we looked at are sourced, but I'd just like to also review quickly. I've tried to give you a sample of the tools that are out there. First, ExpressVHDL from iLogic. It gives you the capability of describing graphically in state charts and activity charts your model, actually simulating at that level with animation, and then generating VHDL code. The second one, the Hum Design System, is also a VHDL code generator, but does not use graphics. It's basically a spreadsheet type of format that does give you a graphic view of the abstract waveforms. The Standard Developers Kit is more or less a software productivity enhancer, but that's dealing strictly with the VHDL language. And the last one we talked about today is a VHDL design assistant, which deals with that ugly thing of managing the code and also providing some graphical tools. That's just sort of four out of the number of tools that are available, and I just wanted to give you a view of what we've looked at. I do have a copy of documentation from each one of these companies, and if you want to see me during break time, I only have one copy, so I'd ask you not to take that with you. Are there any questions? Cut. Excuse me? Yeah? Why do I do that? First part. It's the second slide. Let me show you. The first slide is that. The second slide is library history at DEC. Now you're going to tell me that that you've captured it from library history on. That's all of it. Before I got to this? I don't think so. I can't. This is the second slide. I mean, I had this up within 5 minutes after I started, or less.
I don't know. It took a while.
I can't think. Oh, it's no problem. No, that's okay. Hey, look, the way I look at it, you got this version of it, or you got the other version of it?
I have to give you credit, because you remember everything. Because I didn't hear yours the first time.
Oh, you did?